streaming on Netflix.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Loride. Well, coming up, there are two efforts to put an assault weapons ban on the ballot in 2020. And we'll talk with the leader of one of those efforts in just a moment. And later, we'll talk with the newest member of the big field of candidates running to be Tampa's next mayor. The election is next March, but already there's a large group of people who want the job. Well, first up today, there are two efforts to let Florida voters decide whether or not to ban assault-type weapons. One campaign is being led by South Florida Congressman Ted Deutsch. He wants to get a measure on the 2020 ballot that would restrict the sale of AR-15-style rifles. The NRA and other gun groups have fought hard against a ban on the AR-15, saying it's used by lawful owners for personal protection and target shooting. And if the ban gets on the ballot, a constitutional challenge is almost certain from groups like the NRA. Getting a referendum on the 2020 ballot would require 766,000 signatures from registered Florida voters, and the measure would then need to pass by at least 60%. A Florida Atlantic University poll conducted in the weeks after the Parkland shooting found 69% of Florida voters in support of a ban on assault-style rifles. Donald Cleveland, who is president of a commercial insurance firm in South Florida, is slightly ahead in the process of getting it on the ballot. The State Division of Elections already approved the draft of his ballot initiative to ban military-style weapons. After the Parkland shooting, Cleveland formed the Stop the Killing Committee and launched a website to start gathering signatures needed to get the proposal on the 2020 ballot. And Donald Cleveland joins us right now on the phone. Don, welcome to WMNF. Good to have you here.
Well, thank you, Rob. I appreciate the time you've taken to give me the opportunity to talk about our effort.
Don, let me ask you a little bit about your background. I understand that you're in the insurance business.
Yes, I've been doing insurance and risk management for a number of years, and this is primarily in the commercial endeavor. And prior to getting into that field again, I was the director of risk management for the largest public construction authority in the U.S., we managed safety and risk management for over 540 locations and 10,000 dwelling units and other kinds of units and buildings, and that was in New York.
You're a native of Iowa. I read that you're also a veteran of the U.S. Army and that you were quite a marksman in the U.S. Army.
Well, yes, as a matter of fact, I did spend 10 years in the service. Five of those was in the Army Reserve with 103rd Armored Reconnaissance Regiment as a private first class. And then I became an officer and served 4 years with the 4th Armored Division in Europe during the Cold War.
And you own guns?
At this time, I don't. There was that one time when I was, as you mentioned earlier, really a highly qualified marksman. Went around the country and competed in various marksmanship activity, both as a competitor in university and then also in the Army Reserve, and qualified. In fact, won one of the most highest awards that happens to be awarded by the NRA, and that's the Distinguished Marksmanship Award. Since I left the service, I gave up owning guns.
Now, you started a campaign to get a measure on the ballot that would ban assault-style rifles. What does your measure call for?
Well, it basically takes off on the Second Amendment to the Constitution of the United States and just describes that there are certain kinds of weapons that belong in the hands of a military or a militia. And in the petition itself described the fact that a militia is, in fact, the National Guard of the state of Florida and other organized police units, and that those are the only people or members of those organizations are the only people who are eligible to own or possess an assault-type rifle that is either automatic, semi-automatic, or has a magazine in excess of 7 rounds of ammunition.
And have you already started collecting signatures to get this on the ballot?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we started that endeavor about the same time that we launched the website. And it's one of those processes that is not going to be easy for anyone. because, as you mentioned earlier in the program, we have to really have 790-some thousand, or my preference is 1 million, petitions signed, and that's why we had to start the campaign at this point in time, because all of those signed petitions have to be filed with the Secretary of State's office in February of 2020. So we don't really have until November of 2020. The petition campaign has to be complete by February of 2020. And we have already received approximately 150 signatures just from local distribution, and we are receiving more and more that come into our headquarters mailbox every day from online signatures, and we've not had a chance to tabulate the most recent count that we've received.
Big number, though, 766,000 signatures. That's a lot. A lot of organizations pay people to gather signatures. Are you going to do something like that?
We've not crossed that bridge yet. We are going to rely, during this part of the campaign, heavily on social media and the website and attending individual meetings and talking to people on a one-to-one basis. But I think, you know, you hit the nail on the head when earlier in the introduction of the program, you mentioned that 69% of the people in the state of Florida support banning assault weapons. I don't know how many of those people are eligible voters. I mean, I don't think that was revealed in the information that you gave. But the point is, a very large number of citizens in the state of Florida and in the United States have for years supported this kind of an endeavor. And it's one of those areas where, unfortunately, representative democracy has failed. And thank God that Florida is one of the states in the United States, there are approximately 19 or 20, which allow direct action by the citizens in the form of direct democracy. And that's, we hope, going to empower the people to take action on this measure, and with almost 70% support in the state based upon the most recent poll, I don't think it will be impossible, or I wouldn't have undertaken the task. But it is going to be a very difficult process, and it will require work. Nothing that is good is acquired by just sort of laughing your way to the goal line. That doesn't happen.
Well, our guest is Donald Cleveland, who started a group called Stop the Killing, and he's trying to gather signatures on a ballot for a ballot initiative that would be on the 2020 ballot that would ban military-style weapons. Don is the president of a commercial insurance firm in South Florida, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. How did the Parkland massacre, when that happened, what were your thoughts?
Well, Rob, it really is one of those things where I was very, very concerned about this whole attitude about not allowing assault weapons to be banned based upon the fact that we had had an assault weapons ban before that expired in, it lasted for 10 years and expired in 2004, and that stood the test of actions against the law in the court system, and remained there, and failed to be enacted again because it was a sunset clause on it, and that sunset clause really said that if there aren't enough votes in Congress to reenact it, that then it will die, and there will be no more regulation of assault weapons. Well, when I saw that happen, that really upset me. Of course, that was some time ago. And then we started having this series of violent attacks, not only on schools, but on people going to a nightclub or the people going to a concert. And then we had the event in Parkland, and that just pushed me over the edge. Because, as I said, the elected officials were doing nothing about it. So I thought that I needed to take my knowledge, because not only have I been in the insurance business, but I was a lobbyist for 10 years. And I was successful in leading an endeavor in another state to pass a constitutional amendment for that state, which required also a 60% vote. And so based upon the inactivity of the elected officials, I felt it was time for a citizen, and preferably a citizen with my knowledge, to be able to step forward and help to create an environment of direct democracy that would allow the people to tell the government and the officials what to do, rather than allowing them to continue to just give high fives to the students or walk by and say, you're doing a good job, students, or trying to send letters to the survivors or the relatives of victims saying, hey, you know, we're really sorry, God bless you. That's not enough. We have to act, and that's why I decided to act.
And what do you say to people in the NRA who say that it's not the guns that kill people, it's the people that kill people?
I ask one simple question. Since I was a member of the NRA, and I have a lot of their medals in my medal drawer and on a board, I ask one simple question, and that question is, how many mass murders have you seen committed in your lifetime that were committed with a machine gun? And they look at me, and they don't have an answer. And then I respond back, the answer is simple. Machine guns have been banned in the United States since the mid-30s. And that's the reason that you don't have mass killings committed by machine guns. So that demonstrates the fact that if you regulate the tool, that the harvest of murder will be less. And in this case, the tool, the preferred tool, happens to be the assault weapons that are sold openly and possessed by numerous individuals, and that tool allows them to harvest through death many, many people that should never be harvested. I think one of the students put it very well when they said, really, if that mass murderer had walked in, or the alleged mass murderer had walked into the school with a knife, how many people would have died? And I can say, if it was a revolver with six shots, how many would have died? Or my amendment limits things to seven rounds, how many would have died? It's so tragic when one person has to die or be wounded in such an event. But if you limit the instrument of death, you limit the ability of anyone to commit such mass murder.
Donald Cleveland is our guest, and his group is Stop the Killing. And is that the website, too, Stop the Killing?
Yes, it is. It happens to be www.stopthekilling.us, not a .com or .org.us.
And Don is in South Florida. He's the president of a commercial insurance firm. He's an Army veteran, and he's a part of a group that is trying to get an amendment on the 2020 ballot that would ban military-style weapons here in Florida. There is another effort, and we'll probably talk about that later on, especially as we get closer to 2020. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. You mentioned the previous ban on assault-style weapons that was in place from the late 1990s to the early 2000s. Yeah. Wasn't one of the problems with that ban defining what a military-style weapon is, and weren't the manufacturers able to make slight modifications on their weapons to make them legal?
Yes, there was a great deal of discussion about that, and that's why, rather than trying to identify each individual type of weapon that would qualify, the amendment is broader than that and brings into consideration anything that would be a military-style assault weapon with a magazine of more than seven rounds. And to really get down to brass tacks on this, you have to look at how law is interpreted. And when you look at one of the most recent interpretations of gun law by the United States Supreme Court, that is the District of Columbia versus Heller, it turns out that the court looks for definitions not only in a statute that may be written, but believe it or not, the Supreme Court in numerous cases relies upon what the common man would use, Webster's Dictionary or the Cambridge Unabridged Dictionary. And the definitions found in the dictionary cited by the Supreme Court really say, at least now at the present time, say that it is any kind of a semi-automatic rifle that appears to or has a military appearance. So the Supreme Court has always relied on common sense in addition to what might be in the law. And since this is a recently decided case on gun laws, I think that common sense using the dictionary is what would happen.
Now, here's a question related to that. Bill writes, does over 7 rounds include handguns or is it just rifles? I have 2 handguns that hold 9 rounds.
Well, in the petition, it relates primarily to rifles.
All right, so handguns might be excluded. Don, let me ask you one last question. That is endorsements. Do you have allies? Have groups or people endorsed your efforts? And could you name some of the groups or people that have endorsed the effort?
Well, at the present time, we don't have any organization that has endorsed the effort. I've been contacted by both political parties locally, by members of those parties. I've also been contacted by people who had an organization formed right after the Parkland shooting to try to get the Constitutional Commission to work with them, where they could recommend amendments. It would be, every 20 years they have the right to do that. And they contacted me the other day and said that they would like to work with me, that whole endeavor or the whole group that had decided to work on using the Constitutional Commission to amend the Constitution. So the support on these things, as I said, is something that's going to be difficult in the long term, but nonetheless, based upon the short time that the website has been up, based upon the short time that the petition has been approved, there has been I've had a large amount of contact. I've also had contact from people who are very much opposed to it.
Have you had any angry phone calls?
Yes, both the phone calls and emails. But
no.
I expected that.
I wonder about the. Do you think you're going to be successful?
I wouldn't have put my foot in the water if I didn't think I could swim the stream. That's sort of a Midwesterner's way of looking at it. Yes, I believe we'll be successful because, again, going back to even the figures that you pointed out at the beginning of your discussion here, or our discussion here, when you have 69% of the people supporting this type of activity, it can't help but be a success if they vote their conscience.
Do you think,
or work their conscience.
Do you think conservatives, you said you've been contacted by members of both political parties, do you think conservatives are divided on this issue of whether or not to ban military-style rifles? Do you think that there's a large group of conservatives that might agree with you?
I believe so, because this is not a partisan issue. Killing kids is not a partisan issue, and when you have them dying in your backyard, people will think differently about that on an individual basis than on a partisan basis. And that's the kind of feedback that I've been getting.
Well, Don, if people want to find out more, what's the best website for your group, Stop the Killing?
Well, that would be the one that just went up about a week and a half ago, and that's our stopthekilling.us. And we will have the full range of social media going. The Facebook page should go up sometime this week as well.
Don Cleveland, thanks a lot for coming on WMNF.
Well, I really appreciate your time, Rob, and thank you for your interest in this issue.
Thanks, and we'll put up a link to your site on our website, and we'll follow this and see what happens.
Thanks again.
All right, thanks, Don. That's Don Cleveland, president of a commercial insurance firm in South Florida. After the Parkland shooting, Cleveland formed the group Stop the Killing Committee and launched a website to start gathering signatures to get a proposal on the 2020 Florida ballot to ban military-style weapons. And I mentioned before that, at least according to a survey earlier this year, a Florida Atlantic University poll conducted in the weeks after the Parkland shooting, 69% of Floridians are in support of a ban on assault-style rifles. Well, you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Our phone number is 813-239-9663 and email address dj@wmnf.org. Well, the election in the city of Tampa is March, next March, 10 months away. But the candidates for mayor of Tampa are already getting in the race. The latest candidate is philanthropist and retired banker David Straz. Straz is a Milwaukee native who's donated heavily to the Tampa Performing Arts Center that's now named after him and the University of Tampa. Tampa voters are largely Democrats, and even though city races are nonpartisan, questions have been raised about Straz's political affiliation. We're going to hear an interview I did earlier this week with David Straz, who announced his candidacy for mayor, and that's one of the questions I asked him about his political affiliation. Here's that interview. Why do you want to be mayor, David?
Well, over the years, I've been able to provide philanthropy to our city and be involved in culture and been very successful at it as a result of my business experience. I have been chairman of the University of Tampa and given them a residence hall. I have been chairman of the Lowry Park Zoo. I was the benefactor of the Straz Manatee Hospital. And I've naturally been involved in this famous Straz Center. So I've done a lot of philanthropy, been involved in a lot of culture, and I now have a calling to give back in the way of leadership and vision to our city. So that's what I'm going to do.
What do you think the number one issue in the city of Tampa is as we speak today?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, the number one issue is managing the budget. And I have a background in budgets and finance. I've spent my entire career in banking, running big companies, and managing the budgets. And I think that's really important for us in Tampa. And I intend to aggressively manage our budget without increasing taxes.
How would you say the previous mayor has managed the budget?
Well, I think he's done a good job. From what I know and when I read the newspapers, I think he's done a good job. He's a friend of mine. I ran his transition committee 8 years ago when he was first elected. He and I worked on the first two budgets together. We worked on those line item by line item, so I've got a little bit of experience with that, and I think he's done a good job.
As you know, the race is a nonpartisan race, and it really doesn't matter if you're a Democrat or Republican, but a lot of Democrats will be voting in the Tampa City election next year. And a lot of people are wondering about where you stand politically. They're wondering, are you a registered Democrat or are you a registered Republican?
I'm a registered Democrat, and my views align quite nicely with the Democrats.
Now, some people have said, or there have been reports that perhaps you helped Donald Trump during his election campaign.
I did not. Did not support him at all. I did vote for him, and I believe that was a mistake. If I had that to do over again, I wouldn't do it, and I wouldn't vote for him again. His values and way of doing business do not align with mine.
Well, give us an example where his values don't align with yours.
Well, mostly the way he calls people names and has a revolving door in the people that work for him. He seems to have trouble attracting good people and keeping them. And that's not anything that I subscribe to.
Besides the budget, what area of the city of Tampa do you think needs the most work in terms of the mayor's responsibilities?
Well, I think we need to review all of the neighborhoods and see what the neighborhoods need. There have been a lot of things done for specific neighborhoods in the last few years, but I think we need to look at all the neighborhoods, including East Tampa.
When you say look at the neighborhoods...
Well, I look and see what they need. My website has on it an invitation for citizens of Tampa to let me know what they think their neighborhoods need so that I can assess everything and put everything together and have a good look at it.
David, transportation comes up as one of the top issues of when I talk to people because we've got crowded roads, afternoon drive time, morning drive time. What would you do about transportation?
Well, I would hire some people and have a real good look at it. It is an issue. coming over here to your studio. I came from the west side. I was at 5020 West Gun Highway for a meeting, and I was given 45 minutes to come over here, and it took me all 45 minutes.
Traffic is terrible.
Yes, yeah. It really is bad.
What do you think about a train system? Would you ever advocate for a train system?
That possibly could work. I think we have to hire the experts and really have a good look at it.
Yeah. I want to get a little bit into your background. You're self-made.
Yes, I am.
Okay, how did you start off?
Well, I have lived the American dream. I started with a broom in my hands, went to work for a bank, did the sweeping of the floors, went through the training program, became a teller, ultimately went out and bought my own small bank, three employees, went to run it, took care of the customers, slept in the basement, built the business, took care of customers day and night. And I repeated that over and over through the years, both in Wisconsin and in Florida. In addition to that, I sold some real estate. I have my real estate broker's license, and I was able to do pretty well at it.
How long ago did you move permanently to Tampa?
Permanently to the Tampa Bay area from Wisconsin was 1980. And then I lived there until 94 and moved into Tampa in 94.
Mm-hmm. All right.
But I was in Pinellas County first.
You're up against some pretty tough competition. You've got
I don't think so.
Okay, you've got former County Commissioner Ed Taranchik. You've got Mike Suarez, who's on the City Council. You've got the former police chief, Jane Castor. There's a lot of people who have announced that they're running for mayor or are considering a run for mayor. What do you make of the competition?
Well, look, they're all recycled politicians and government employees. We've had enough of that. We need somebody with experience in business that can run this billion-dollar enterprise that we know as the city of Tampa.
And you're the man.
I'm the man.
In addition to the transportation issue, I want to ask about, you know, there are some mayors, mayor of St. Petersburg has joined in a lawsuit against the state legislature over the way it handles gun legislation and also local ordinances. The legislature has taken away a lot of power from local communities to pass their own local ordinances on a variety of issues, not just guns, but local wage ordinances, et cetera. What do you think about Tallahassee's control over local government?
Well, I think it's too much, and I would support Rick Kreisman's lawsuit against the state. If I were mayor, I would join it. He's a friend of mine and a good man and done a great job. And we should have some control over that in the city. And it shouldn't be dictated by the great white father in Tallahassee.
One last question I want to ask you about before you go, and that is public money for a baseball stadium. Do you support moving the Rays to Ybor City? And do you think that public money should be involved in building a new stadium?
Well, I think it's very good for Tampa if we have Major League Baseball here. So that's part of the question that you asked. Yes, I think it's good for us. But I'm not sure that there's an appetite for the taxpayers to foot the bill. So we're going to have a look at that. We're going to have to get some experts in. We're going to have to see what the team owners chip in. We're going to have to see what the county's willing to chip in and really investigate the situation. But it's very good for us, and we should do what we can to keep Major League Baseball in this area.
One last question. Do you have a political hero? Is there somebody in the history of the U.S. or the history of Florida?
Well, I like Winston Churchill.
Why?
I just like everything he's done.
All right, well, David Straz, thanks a lot for coming by WMNF.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, that's philanthropist and retired banker David Straz, 75 years old, running now for mayor of Tampa. The election is next March, and a lot of people are already in the race. Pretty unusual situation. Former police chief Jane Castor is in that race already. Two city council members, Harry Cohen and Mike Suarez, former county commissioner Ed Taranchik, Topher Morrison, who is a local businessman. Those are all the candidates. And then there are rumors about other people getting involved in the race. So, you know, we haven't even gotten through the U.S. Senate race. We haven't gotten through the race for governor. There's legislative seats and judicial candidates all over the map here. and they will be on the ballot in August for the primary and November for the general election. But already people are looking forward to the mayor's race, too. So let's open up the phone lines and get your take on this. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. Email address is dj@wmnf.org. And a couple of people written in about the interview you just heard with David Straz. Terry writes, sounds like David doesn't have answers to the city's problems, just wants to ask people what the city needs. My big question is about Trump. He says he voted for him, but wouldn't now, because his values don't align with Trump, like how he calls people names, did David not listen to Trump before the election, writes Terry. David writes this regarding Mr. Straz. He says, I think David Straz would be a good mayor as far as billionaires go. He's a much better public citizen than Donald Trump. Believe me, in terms of voting, I am torn between Jane Castor, who I respect a lot, and Straz. It'll be a tough race. I'm curious to see who Buckhorn will endorse, writes David. Let's take some phone calls. You're listening to Radioactivity on WMNF in Tampa, and Max is in West Tampa. Max, what's on your mind today?
Yeah, hey, is David Straz gone now?
No, this is an interview I did with him on Tuesday.
Oh, okay. Well, I'd just like to point out that David Straz, when he says that he voted for Donald Trump, he overlooks the fact that Donald Trump ran on what was openly racist platform. He was the originator of the birther movement. He mocked people with disabilities. He mocked women. He continues to do these things. We're still seeing like revelations every day of people who he pays off because he feels that he's basically an American oligarch who, you know, he has sex with porn actresses and pays them off, and for some reason he can sort of just say, oh yeah, he doesn't keep good people around him. That is not talking about the issues. That is not talking about what a solid American politician should be doing. These are weird times. This is not normal, and it makes me very angry that that person can state their views in that way and have it not be challenged. And frankly, sir, I'd like you to challenge people more in that way. I'll let you talk. I'll go away.
Yeah. Okay, Max. Thanks a lot. This is an early interview, and I wanted to do a kind of a get to know you interview. Usually, the first interviews that people do with politicians are kind of soft, and then as the campaigns go on, you ask them tough questions. I think people are smart enough to make up their own minds. I think there were some major points in there things that Straz said. That I don't need to say anything. I think the message is clear. Now, if you want me to start jumping on people, I always do that as we get closer to the elections. The elections are 10 months away. And I will ask tough questions of all the candidates, especially as we get closer and closer to that March election date. But if you want me to beat up on candidates, if President Trump were here, believe me, I would ask him some tough questions, but I hear what you said. And Max, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. Here's an email from Bill in Pinellas Park. He says, I got signatures for the medical marijuana issue to get the amendment on the ballot. And it seems that the lobbyists from Big Pharma have had pretty much bogged that down. So if this issue about military-style weapons gets on the ballot, I believe the outcome would be much the same. It seems that the will of the people has little to do with the government anymore. That's Bill in Pinellas Park. Bill, thanks a lot. 813-239-9663. Randy in Dade City says this, my answer to the question of guns kill people is people with automatic weapons kill more people than people with hunting rifles. That's Randy in Dade City when pressed with that question about don't people kill people, not guns kill people. Terry writes this. I actually already read Terry's email. Terry, thank you. And here's an email from the 813 area code. Straz says that he's the best person for the job because he's not a politician. That's what Trump said, but he has turned out to be the worst person for the job. What's his reply, writes 813. And 863 writes, if you want to go from a bank teller to owning a bank nowadays, you are either going to go belly before you set foot, or you have connections with a rat. That's exactly the way it's written here. Not exactly sure what 863 meant, but 863, thank you. Jim in St. Pete writes this, how do you go from being a poor teller to just buying a small bank? David Straz sounds like another millionaire looking to hold political office to enrich his friends and aggrandize himself. It appears he has no real agenda to help the people of Tampa who need the most assistance, but instead that he will reduce spending on social programs without providing any constructive ideas. Another example that we are living in an oligarchy, writes Jim in St. Pete, and Jim says, screw politics. Okay, that's Jim's take. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And Danny's in Tampa. Hi, Danny, you're on. What would you like to say?
Good morning, Rob. I would like for you to see you interview Donald Trump myself.
Yeah, wouldn't that be fun? I mean,
that would
and
be
then you
real
could
fun.
You could call in.
Oh God, it would be so good. I would be civil. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't say any cuss words, nothing like that. Don't worry. You know, Rob, talking about Donald Trump. You know, it's hard for me to even try to even give him credit. I have so much disdain for him, but you know, I'm going to give credit where credit is due. If it is something that he's credited to with the prisoners, and you know, with his summit coming up with Kim Jong Un, and believe me, there's a great chance that he could screw that up. Believe me, there's no doubt about it. And the demands last night, somebody was talking about the demands that he would make. All of a sudden, he thinks it's almost like a done deal that they're already going to denuclearize. He's going to give up all his nuclear weapons. He's going to be allowed to have test sites. All these restrictions that he's that Kim Jong-un is supposed to agree to, like the ones that were in place with Iran before he broke up this deal and made it more dangerous. And he thinks that this is going to go ahead and go away. And for what we know, all we know, Kim Jong-un might just want him to just be recognized and recognize him as a nuclear power, and so be it. So, I mean, you know, it's going to be very risky. This whole Iran deal, that was, as we heard in the previous show, we know that Benjamin Netanyahu has always wanted the United States to go ahead and bomb Iran. That's no secret, even if they didn't do it themselves. And with John Bolton, there's a good chance to do it. I'm sure that Alan Dershowitz is very happy this morning, So I was just wondering, do you think that this is going to be, go ahead, and he thinks this is going to be like a done deal when he goes over there?
Well, you know, personally, I'm really hopeful that the president is successful on every one of his points.
But now it's more dangerous now with Iran going the other way.
Yeah, well, I think it would be a good thing. I think you raise a really interesting point, Danny, and that is, if the agreement with North Korea looks a lot like the agreement with Iran, why did he throw the Iran deal out and he embraces a new deal with North Korea that essentially does the same thing? Now, we don't know if that's going to be the outline of the North Korean agreement, but that's a really interesting point.
We know that it was because it was an Obama thing that Yahoo's information was supposed to have been about 15 or 20 years old. Let me leave you with this. The other day, Jimmy Kimmel was saying, when he was talking about how he was, dismantling the Iran deal, and he was talking, and he was looking at the teleprompter, and he was saying, and we will put sanctions on Iran. Jimmy Kimmel says, why does this sound like he's always learning how to read in front of all of us? when he looks at it and when he talks in front of a teleprompter.
All right, Danny, thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
All right, have a good weekend. And Patty Perkey is our phone producer today, and Frank Knox is here too. Our phone number is 813-239-9663. So we've got an open line you'll be able to get through pretty quickly. 813-239-9663 is our phone number. I do think it's important to remember, too, that the South Koreans just had an election, and there was it's not exactly the same as the U.S., but there was a liberal peace candidate and there was a more conservative candidate in the South Korean presidential race. The liberal peacenik guy won, President Moon, and he made some of the first overtures to North Korea. He said during the campaign he was willing to talk with North Korea. And so this is all going on as we're paying attention to Trump and Russia and everything else going on in this country. The South Koreans had their own very interesting race, and the more liberal candidate won. And so I don't think that we should forget that this is not just a Trump an agreement that President Trump has reached, but it wouldn't have been reached without the big work of the president of South Korea. Let's hope peace is at hand, and we'll see. Sean says, this is, if it's of any interest, I asked Bob Buckhorn this morning who he wants to be the next mayor, and he says he's still undecided. I think that, the Buckhorn, I think, is going to stay out of endorsing any candidates. That's my sense. And he won't endorse a candidate until maybe we get to a runoff. But Sean is going to have a report on the state of the city address from the new Riverfront Park in downtown Tampa that the mayor just gave this morning. So we'll hear Sean's report on the 3:30 news this afternoon. Here's somebody from the 813 area code who says Vinick for mayor. okay. 813-239-9663, email address dj@wmnf.org. And let's go to Jill in St. Pete. Jill, thank you for calling in. What's on your mind?
Hey, Rob. Well, you just mentioned my point, or one of my points that I was going to bring up. This peace accord that's supposed to be going on with North Korea, I really feel that the South Korean president, I just love the guy. He's a peaceful, he's wonderful. He's willing to share the stage. He's not like Trump. One of the things that puts me off about Trump is he's so egotistical. He wants to say he's the only one, and he's doing it. He's doing everything, and he deserves the Nobel Peace Prize. Well, no, he doesn't. You don't get a peace prize by acting like him, who makes threats. That's not how you get a peace prize. But this South Korean president, he's the one who made the original overtures. He went and visited with Kim Jong-un, and Kim Jong-un visited with him. The sister came over and visited with Moon. And there have been people from our own government that have been going over there and doing some pre-negotiating. And the thing that puts me off about Trump is he will never give anyone else any credit for laying the foundation, where he just has to go in and make the deal, and as one of your callers said, he could screw it up. Yes, he definitely could, because he's that kind of person. He's very egotistical, and if something doesn't stroke his ego, it may all blow up. Who knows?
Yeah, we'll see. All right, Jill, thanks a lot. Thanks.
All right.
Good to hear from you. And let's go to Marita in Wesley Chapel. Hi, Marita. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
Well, I have two comments on David Straw's. One, the caller that called in about how do you go from sweeping up a floor to buying a bank. You have to understand that the banking system was a lot different 50 years ago when David Straw's was young, and that's quite possible.
And Marita, you have to turn down your radio in your car, but go ahead.
Okay, well, I was on Bluetooth. Did you hear the first thing I said?
Yeah, we did.
Okay, the second point is that it really irritates me, these people that are registered Democrats that voted for Trump and now disagree with him, but they're not doing anything about getting rid of him. I mean, he keeps going on and on and on with his crap, and nobody's doing anything. And, the people that voted, I'm sorry now. That doesn't fly. Why don't these people get together and do something about this mess we're in?
Well, I guess, if you don't like President Trump, I guess there's a lot of ways you could go about trying to remove him. One is to help a presidential candidate who will run against him in 2020. Another is to elect members of the House and Senate that would be more vigorous in their attacks on President Trump, especially maybe in the House Judiciary Committee, maybe articles of impeachment. You could join an impeachment organization. There's the California billionaire who is running those ads, and he has an organization. I guess there's a lot of ways, if you were angry at Trump, to get involved.
And can you ask David Straw's what he's doing about it?
I'll ask him next time he comes back. I will ask him. I promise.
Would appreciate that.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Marita. All right, good to hear from you. And Tom writes this, I love your well-informed audience. It's such a relief to know that there are like-minded folks, writes Tom. And let's go to Brian in Sarasota. Hi, Brian, you're on WMNF. What would you like to comment about?
Hi, I don't think the peace overture in Korea is going to work simply because why would Kim trust the United States? I mean, if they walk out of the Iran deal, then why wouldn't they walk out a deal with North Korea as soon as they get a chance and find some other excuse?
Yeah, that's got to weigh heavy on Kim Jong-un as he meets with President Trump. How far can you trust President Trump? It's got to be in the back of his mind or the front of his mind.
Well, the other question I have is, North Korea is not the aggressor. We're the aggressor all over the world. I mean, we're the ones that invade countries and occupy them. And I got a couple other comments, if I could make. You always say that the old people get more conservative as they get older. I refute that. I think if you think about it, in 1968 and 72, who voted for Nixon? The conservatives. And those same people are around that voted for Trump. People don't, maybe some, but most people, if they were a liberal in 1968, they're going to be liberal in 2017 or 2018.
Yeah, Brian, is that your story? Is that what happened to you?
No, I was liberal all my life. Yeah. I mean,
well, that's what I'm saying. You go back to the 60s or 70s, and you've consistently remained a liberal?
I'm 77 years old, and I look at the people that I went to school with, and they've been conservative all their life. And the people that were basically well-educated were liberals all of their life. So that's just my story. And I have one more. Can I have one more comment?
Okay. I think you're on a roll.
This will be quick. There's a difference between a rich Democrat and a rich, wealthy Republican. When a wealthy Democrat votes for a tax increase, he's voting against his own self-interest. But when a rich Republican votes for a tax decrease, they're voting in their own interest. And do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do understand. There's a civic-minded vote, and then there's a personal vote.
Well, there's a me vote, I call it.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. Okay, well, thanks for letting me back.
All right, Brian, thanks a lot. Good to hear from you. Amin writes, it's plain and simple. North Korea has nukes, and Iran doesn't. Besides, Iran is a supporter of the resistance against the occupation of Palestine by the state of Israel, writes Amin. Amin calls Israel a terrorist state there. And then Charles in Tampa says, the only reason Trump got out of the Iran deal is because it was Obama's. Like a petulant, megalomaniacal, ancient Egyptian pharaoh, he's not going to rest until he can wipe Obama's name off every accomplishment he achieved in his 8 years, writes Charles in Tampa. James says this, your guest said he's a businessman, and that's what we need. George W. and Trump were supposed to be businessmen, and that hasn't worked out, writes James. And somebody from the 813 area code says 3.7% unemployment. I think this is from somebody who likes the direction of the country. All right, that's great. Thank you, Anonymous, for saying that. And let's go to Fran in Largo. Fran, you're on. What would you like to say?
Oh, thank you, Rob. No, I would just like to know, with the release of the prisoners from North Korea, how much of it was, excuse me, how much of it was because of Mike Pompeo's doing and other people's, and not Donald Trump's wonderful, fabulous diplomatic skills? How much of it really was up to other people, including Mike Pompeo? That's what I would like to know.
All right, Fran, thanks a lot.
Okay.
All right, thanks. I haven't seen a good story on that yet. Waiting for the Washington Post or the New York Times to give us kind of a deep dive into how that happened. I do think it was interesting, though, because I did watch some of the video that morning of the president welcoming these three people back to the U.S. And I thought it was interesting that one of the president's remarks was about the TV ratings at 2 o'clock in the morning. He said something to the effect that this prisoner release and the arrival of these three people in the U.S. have the highest ratings of any TV show at 2 a.m. And I think the president was being somewhat facetious about it, somewhat comical, but at the same time, I think that is what he cares about a lot. I think he does care about the TV ratings, and I think to some extent, too, by caring about the TV ratings, it has contributed to his success. So we're in a new era where I think, you know, it's almost like Fahrenheit 451, where people no longer read. They only watch TV to get their information. I tend to think that you get the best information reading. I'm often sent emails from conservatives and liberals who provide me with things that they want me to be aware of. And it's interesting that when the conservatives send me something, it's usually a link to a video. And when the liberals send me something, it's usually a link to a long article in some publication. Take that for what it's worth. Let's go to Ann in St. Pete. Ann, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hi, yeah. I enjoy your show, and I just want to ask if anybody has thought about the ramifications of North and South Korea getting together, although it sounds lovely. We must remember that their prime enemy is, I believe, still Japan. Correct me if I'm wrong, but they don't like Japan.
You mean?
And also, who is our ally? And has anybody thought about what Putin has to do with any of this? Because I believe Russia supplies North Korea with oil. And I think all of that has a lot to do with what is happening now with you know, the possible coming together of North and South Korea.
So do you think that you're thinking that Japan is going to be more isolated as a result of this peace agreement?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And and that's a bad thing given the connection between the U.S. and Japan?
Yes, it is. And I just see these things coming together, and it isn't good. And I never hear about what Putin might have up his sleeve, as you know. Has anybody thought about that? Because
we'll let some people call in.
Seems like the Cheshire Cat, you know, sitting there watching these things happen, and he's not. You know, I don't know. That's just my thoughts on that. I think that he has a lot more to do with all of this than anybody is even mentioning.
Well, we're going to find out. Ann, thanks a lot. We're going to find out. We're going to find out what's been agreed to between President Trump and the leader of North Korea. We're going to find out in a few days as they hold their summit meeting, and we're going to find out, you know, what the agreement requires of both countries, whether the agreement is just like the Iran nuclear agreement. I think Danny's point is a good one. So we'll find out. We're jumping the gun a little bit, and whether or not Putin is you know, going to come out ahead on this, or Japan's going to be hurt by this, we'll find out in the coming weeks. And when it happens, it'll be a fodder for a good conversation too, won't it? And thanks a lot. Let's go to John in Safety Harbor. John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hello.
John, you're on. What would you like to say?
Yes, I just want to call. First of all, I want to agree with that man that said that Mr. Trump's main agenda seems to be to undo everything that Obama has done, but he's taking credit now for having the greatest tax revenue in history. And I told everybody when he put these tax cuts in for corporations that we're going to see a surge in revenue because all that money is flowing back. He keeps talking about, you know, the money coming back from overseas and people getting raises and bonuses and all that. But of course, all that's not really true because they're doing share buybacks, which is not going to help anyone except the shareholders. A better strategy might have been to say, we'll lower the rate, but you bring it back and you pay at least half of that money out in dividends, which is then taxable. And that will keep going on if all corporations pay a percent of their profits in dividends, a minimum percent. There's a lot more income out there and a lot bigger tax base.
And John, if those people were right, and there would be greater government revenue, then we would see a reduction in the federal deficit. But we haven't seen a reduction in the federal deficit. The federal deficit is going up and up and up. It's going to break $1 trillion. So that revenue is, I mean, they may have claimed that it's going to happen, but it hasn't happened.
Well, I'm just saying that's what they're claiming right now, that revenues are up.
Yeah, I'm agreeing with you, and I think that that's the exhibit A, is that the federal deficit is going up, and as you said, all those extra profits are being used for stock buybacks. They're not going down to the workers. John, thanks a lot for calling in. If you want to comment about today's show, you can call us up at 813-238-8001 and record your comment on extension 115. And I'll play your comments back Monday morning at 11 o'clock. Now stay tuned.